Thanks very much, Kieran. As Kieran said, the world of FX benchmarks is going to undergo a bit of a change on Monday, for which I am reasonably responsible, so you can blame me if it all goes wrong, although I don't think it will. So that's actually what I'm going to talk about today, is what's happening on Monday and what's happening in the general world of FX benchmarks. So, as most of you know, I hope you know, FX benchmarks are an important part of the financial market infrastructure. They're referenced in many financial contracts and are particularly prevalent in global bond and equity market indices because they're used to aggregate different markets into a common currency. As most of you probably know, the long-standing way of doing this has been to use a set of foreign exchange rates calculated at a particular time of day, generally 4 p.m. London, which is the London fix, and that's published by WM Reuters. So attention on what was a heretofore fairly arcane part of the financial market infrastructure has increased significantly over the past couple of years as concerns mounted about the integrity of benchmark rates and the possibility of market misconduct around the benchmark fixing process. So following investigations by a number of authorities, some of these concerns have proven to be well-founded, and we saw a number of those come into the public domain late last November. And those investigations are still ongoing. Reflecting those emerging concerns about the FX benchmark process, in early last year, the Financial Stability Board tasked a group chaired by Paul Fisher, who's at the Bank of England, and me, to formulate a set of proposals to improve the benchmark process and reduce the scope for manipulation. So just like our work was conducted completely separately from all those investigations going on, and for better or worse, we didn't have any access to any of the information that was uncovered in the course of those investigations. So the group that Paul and I chaired, the Foreign Exchange Benchmark Group, was comprised of members from all the major financial centres, both on the central bank side and the securities regulation side. We talked extensively over the course of the middle of last year with pretty much all parts of the FX industry right around the world to get their views, including asset managers, index providers, FX platforms, corporates, and FX dealers or banks themselves. We put out a preliminary report for public comment in July last year, got a fair amount of good feedback on that, and then the final report of our group was presented to and approved by the Financial Stability Board last September at their meeting in Cairns. So I've had a number of people ask me what status this report actually has. And the bottom line is it has been approved by the Financial Stability Board, a body which consists of heads of central banks, securities regulators, ministries of finance and treasuries of all the major G20 jurisdictions. So it's been approved by them. I would guess that probably comes with a bit of weight behind it. So the report contains 15 recommendations aimed at improving the benchmark process and reducing the incentives for manipulation. The recommendations we put out gathered broad support across the industry. We're now in mid-February, several months on from the release of the report, and so what I want to do today is just see what has been achieved in that time in following through on our recommendations. So my general assessment is there's been significant progress on some recommendations, but little on others, and that's what I'll run through now. So the recommendations address both the structure of the benchmark process, sort of the mechanics, as well as the conduct of participants in the process. And the recommendations can be divided into four main areas. So the benchmark methodology itself, i.e. the way WM actually calculates the fix. By the way, I'm going to talk about the London fix nearly all the time. There are obviously other FX benchmarks besides the one that WM puts out. Most notably and the most heavily, the one which you see most of the other activity around is the ECB fix in the middle of the European afternoon. I'm not going to talk about, we put out some recommendations around central bank calculated reference rates. I'm not going to talk about those today, so I'm mostly going to focus on the London fix. I'll also talk about the execution infrastructure, that is the way that the fixed trades are actually executed in the market. We might put out some recommendations around that, and then finally talk about the recommendations we put out around market conduct. So the when we put out those recommendations, we stated in the report that we believe the recommendations would be implemented by the market participants concerned, and indeed, as I said, generally they had fairly widespread support. And as I said, also the recommendations were endorsed by the FSB. So there is a strong expectation that the recommendations will be implemented. They are, however, not explicitly embodied in regulation. Nevertheless, what we said in the report, which I thought was fairly obvious, but some people didn't quite pick up on it, we stated that if these recommendations were not acted on, authorities could conclude that a regulatory response was necessary to generate the desired improvement in market structure and conduct. Moreover, given that we've now seen some of these investigations into the alleged misconduct come into the public domain, a regulatory response may still be required, and indeed in the UK, as a number of you probably know, FX benchmarks are now a regulated activity. Finally, further in that regard, the UK Fair and Effective Markets Review, which is ongoing at the moment, and the submissions closed at the end of last month, have actually sought feedback on issues around benchmarks. So let me now run through our recommendations in a bit more detail and say where we're up to on them. So the first set of recommendations concern the calculation of the 4pm fix. So the way for a number of years WM has done this is that they calculate it over a one-minute window centred on 4pm. They take data from either Thomson Reuters or EBS, depending on which currency pair you're talking about, but it's only one or the other of those, not both. They took snapshots of trade and order rates at one-second intervals, it's the last trade in each second, and calculated the unweighted median rate over the minute window. So the WM fix is calculated based on executed prices, in contrast to LIBOR, which was a submission-based process. So the issues we were dealing with in terms of FX benchmarks are quite different from those which surrounding LIBOR. So while we concluded that the WM benchmark methodology was basically sound, the group recommended widening the window from 1 minute to enhance the robustness of the fix calculation. So our view was that the wider window should reduce the capacity for manipulation while still generating a replicable market price. The group also recommended that rather than use only one price feed, WM incorporate feeds and transaction data from more sources into its calculation, provided the additional sources were of sufficient quality. So there are any number of price sources out there, some of them of varying quality. What we wanted WM to do was to look at incorporating more feeds into their calculation, but only the ones which are of adequate quality. So in principle, arbitrage should ensure that any data source should used by WM should be representative of the market, but we thought it relatively costly to use a wider range of sources, and this would be beneficial in getting a, for want of a better word, truer picture of the market over a short time frame. So WM has followed up on this, and they've announced that they will widen the fixed window to 5 minutes, commencing on Monday. They're also going to use, on Monday, additional price feeds. So that major change is actually going ahead on Monday. So shift to a wider window, to a five-minute window, and using more price feeds. In addition, we recommended that WM form a user group to actually consult with the industry to consider future changes to the fix. In announcing the changes that are coming into effect on Monday, WM has sought feedback from the industry, and actually they're originally going to widen the window in December, but because of some market feedback, they've pushed it back till Monday. And they're in the process of actually establishing such a user group. Finally, as some of you know, may well know, IOSCO put out a set of principles around appropriate benchmarks around the middle of last year, and IOSCO did the preliminary assessment of the way WM does its benchmark calculations against those principles, made a number of recommendations, and WM is in the process of following through on those recommendations and has indeed done most of it. So in terms of the calculation methodology, it's basically the changes we recommended are happening, and they're actually happening on Monday. The next set of the group's recommendations address the market infrastructure around fixing trades. That is, how fixing trades are actually executed in the market. So the aim here was to reduce the incentives and opportunities for misbehaviour generated by the market structure in place previously. So to give you some idea, the amount of volume which goes through that one-minute fixing window is around 10 times larger than at any other time in the course of the trading day. So if you look at minute-by-minute trading volumes, there's just an absolutely massive spike at 4 p.m. London time. So a hell of a lot more volume goes through then than any other time of the day. The only one which gets close to it is actually the, for some currencies, is the ECB fix. So a major source of the large volumes of these trades is asset managers seeking to rebalance their portfolios in line with the indices they track that incorporate the London fix in their calculation. So obviously, one way to minimise your tracking error between the portfolio and the foreign exchange component of the index they're tracking is to execute at the fixing price itself. So orders for these trades coming from asset managers and other fixing trades are provided by the client to the FX dealers ahead of the fix, and often that time is actually quite short, so only a few minutes ahead of the fix. Importantly, the dealer typically, in the past, has agreed to execute these orders at the as-yet-unknown fixing price, and often doesn't charge either a fee or a spread on the trade. So the dealer is agreeing with the client they will execute at mid. They don't know what mid is yet, but they'll execute at mid, and they won't charge a spread on it. So those arrangements differ from standard principal-based risk transfer services offered by dealers, where the risk to the dealer is generally mitigated by using the current market price and applying a spread. The arrangements for fixed-related orders mean that the price risk on the transaction is transferred entirely from the client to the dealer without any explicit compensation. The dealers then have to manage the risk associated with this flow. So the trades conducted as a result of this process can generate optics of dealers trading ahead of the fix, even if all the dealer is simply doing is trying to manage their risk. So the difference between front running and risk management, they're pretty much observationally equivalent. These dynamics can also create an incentive for dealers to manipulate the fix rate to generate profit from what would otherwise be potentially a loss-making exercise. So to address this problem, the FXBG supported the development of industry initiatives to create independent netting and execution facilities for transacting fix orders. Some of those products have been launched by a few companies on the market in recent months. They generally have the feature of maximising netting opportunities and then executing the order in a way that delineates the separation between the dealer trading on their own account and the dealer transacting on behalf of the customer. So it remains to be seen. So those products are out there. It remains to be seen how much traction they actually get. In our preliminary report in July, we had sought feedback on the development of a central netting utility, basically something which took all the fixing orders in the market as a whole into one central location, tried to maximise the netting opportunities, and reduce the need for customers to provide orders in advance of the fix to dealers themselves. So we put that out there just to see what people's reaction was. Some of the feedback was positive, but others confirmed some of the problems we ourselves had identified that such a utility might confront, particularly once you do all the netting and you get down to the residual positions. The question is, well, what do you do then? How do you execute them in the market to actually determine the fixing price? And there's no easy solution to that. So we put that out there, got some feedback on it, but then in the end didn't go ahead with recommending that. So the above recommendations address the structure of the FX market around the fix. We believe that the recommended changes will improve outcomes, but at least importantly, we provided a set of recommendations about the behaviour of market participants on all sides of the market. So not just the dealers, but also asset managers and index providers to address the possible incentives for manipulation. So first of all, we recommended, and related to what I was just talking about, the FX dealers charge for fixing transactions in a more transparent manner. So two things there. One, actually charge rather than provide it for free and charge in a more transparent manner. Rather than, for example, relying on the business being subsidised by activities in other parts of the dealer's institutions. We didn't say how you went about charging, so it could either be implemented through a fixed fee or a spread. So if you were to charge a fixed fee, that would be consistent with an agency model of fixed execution. A spread is obviously more consistent with compensation for the risk transfer the bank is undertaking as acting as principal. The shift to a wider window on Monday for the fixed calculation means that the risk transfer is likely to be larger for the bank in being able to replicate the fixing price. So while a number of banks are actively discussing this with their customers and are in the process of moving to charge for the service, I have to say this recommendation is clearly not being universally adopted at this point. Not surprisingly, there's been a bit of a pushback from some customers against paying for something that has been provided previously for free, at least notionally. So long as some dealers remain willing not to charge for this service, competitive forces mean that it's difficult for others to charge. There is clearly a first mover disadvantage here. So much more progress is required here. What may be the case, and what I get from talking to a number of people in the market, what does seem to be happening is that when WM implements the wider window on Monday, that is something of a focal point for people changing their pricing models. And there have been various media reports in recent days suggesting that a number of banks are doing exactly that, and I certainly have confirmed that in conversations with them. But if the fixing service is not directly and transparently charged for, the incentive for inappropriate behaviour remains. So that was our first main recommendation, was charge for the service. Secondly, the group recommended that banks and other FX dealers separate their fixing business from their regular business, their flow business. The primary aim of this recommendation was to reduce the likelihood of inappropriate use of information obtained from the fixing orders. It's not necessarily a first best solution, we get that. What we had to deal with was the incentives around the structure of the market. Clearly, such a separation is not costless, and it does reduce risk absorption opportunities. Nevertheless, our assessment was that the benefits of separating the business would outweigh the costs. Some banks have implemented this recommendation over recent months, but adoption here, again, has been somewhat mixed. So I've received a number of questions about what exactly separation entails. So we didn't really want to be too prescriptive here. How you do it depends partly on how your business is actually set up. The main principle we're trying to get at here is the appropriate segregation of the information flow. There may be a number of different ways of achieving this. An issue which arises here is that the separation of business is clearly more complicated in smaller currencies than it is in the more heavily traded currencies. So we understand that, and in response to these issues, I'm going to talk to my fellow central banks and securities regulators on those questions and see if we can come up with some more guidance around this. But the general principle is separation of the information flow. That really clearly applies to the major currency pairs, regardless of how big an institution you actually are. We get that this is quite costly to do that, but as I said, we think that the benefits from shifting to such a model outweigh the costs, not for you as an institution, but for the market as a whole. Thirdly, the group made a number of recommendations about the appropriate sharing of information. These recommended focused on general principles around information sharing rather than being very prescriptive. So our assessment was that outlining a set of principles was more beneficial in ensuring appropriate behaviour than more prescriptive statements. Detailed prescriptions run the risk of being incomplete, with the potential for market participants to make the assessment that if we don't say if something is not in the explicitly banned, then it must be allowable. So a set of principles, on the other hand, requires market participants to actually think, which may be a foreign concept to some, but anyhow, to actually think more carefully about their general approach to information sharing. So let me now talk a bit about codes of conduct. A similar set of principles are to be embodied in a code of best market practices and shared market global principles, which I get is a bit of a mouthful, which is currently in the final stage of being written jointly by the various foreign exchange committees around the world, which some of you have probably been part of. So the aim of what we're doing of the various FXCs is to promote a set of shared common global principles across all the foreign exchange committees, notwithstanding the fact that we actually, the various jurisdictions employ different codes of conduct. As most of you know here, in Australia we endorse the ACI code, as does the ECB, but the two main jurisdictions don't currently. A final version of the Statement of Shared Principles should be published following the next global FXC meeting, which is in Tokyo in the middle of the month. So at the moment, These principles have been signed off on by the various FXCs. The Australian one did so last week, and the various other FXCs are meeting, have met or are just about to, and we should have this out in the public domain, hopefully in the middle of March, just after the Tokyo meeting. The Foreign Exchange Benchmark Group also recommended that market participants themselves should demonstrate stronger compliance with the various codes of conduct than has been the case in the past, as well as with their own internal codes. Various initiatives are underway on this recommendation at both the institutional level as well as with the market as a whole. Appropriate enforcement of these codes, however, remains a major challenge, and in the UK, the Fair and Effective Markets Review is highlighting this issue as a significant opportunity for reform. So most of this enforcement comes down to ensuring that the institution and the FX market more generally has the appropriate culture. It's a popular word at the moment. But the same problem arises with codes of conduct as with principles for information sharing I mentioned a minute ago. If the codes of conduct are too prescriptive, they're very difficult to draft and they quickly become unreadable. And they run the risk, again, that if something is not explicitly prohibited, it must be okay. So Matt Levine, the Bloomberg commentator, put this problem very succinctly last week. If you don't define culture, it's hard to enforce it. If you do define culture, it's going to be gamed, because that's what everyone's in the business. You know, basically, a very prescriptive code of conduct is just going to be arbitraged. I mean, that's what market participants do. Let me just talk briefly about index providers. There's considerable variation when we were talking to them in their understanding of the FX rates they are actually using. Most of them just took, Not most of them, a number of them just took the FX benchmarks and just stuck them in the index. They didn't really know how they were calculated. They just knew they came from WM. Similarly, in the course, so we recommended that they might actually want to have a better understanding of the indexes they're actually using. Similarly, in the course of our consultation with the market, the group found there was considerable variation among asset managers in their understanding of the FX rates used in the indices they were tracking. And perhaps more importantly, considerable variation in understanding how their FX fixing business was actually being executed in the market. A number of them just said, well, our order goes off, and then it comes back, and it comes back at mid, end of story. So while asset managers should be able to assume that the market infrastructure was adequately robust and that their counterparties conduct themselves with some degree of appropriate behaviour, at the same time, a bit more scrutiny and enforcement from market participants on the buy side is probably desirable. Hence, we recommended that asset managers conduct appropriate due diligence around the FX execution and be able to demonstrate that to their clients if requested. Clearly, such due diligence would be consistent with their regular fiduciary responsibilities to their clients and should be happening already. Nevertheless, we thought it was worth just reiterating that one. So let me just sum up by where we're up to. So we had 15 recommendations of the group. They've been adopted to varying degrees. There's still substantial scope for further progress in some areas. The recommendations to enhance WM's calculation of the London Fix are well in train. They're going into effect on Monday. There are a number of initiatives in the marketplace to provide independent fix execution and netting. Codes of conduct remain a work in progress, but at least from the Foreign Exchange Committee's point of view, hopefully we have something concrete to show for that in a few weeks' time. However, there is yet to be significant progress in terms of the pricing and execution of the fixed business within institutions. On pricing, while there may be more than one way of charging for the fixed business that could be adopted, there needs to be more widespread adoption of a pricing model across the industry. On the separation of the fixing business, the primary objective is separation of the information flow. Again, there are a number of ways of doing this, and I get that there may be some scope to provide more guidance to the industry around this, particularly in the case of less traded currencies. So we will work on that. So let me finish by saying there is a strong expectation that these recommendations will be implemented to deliver an improvement in the execution of FX transactions using FX benchmarks, and also in the integrity of benchmarks themselves. The FSB has approved the recommendations that we put out in our report. If these recommendations are not implemented, then the likelihood of a regulatory response coming down the pipe will substantially increase, which may lead the market in not as good a position as it otherwise would be. So that gives you a bit of an overview about where we are at. As I said, there's a fair bit happening. There's going to be a fair bit happening, particularly on Monday. So let me finish there, and I'm happy to take any questions about this topic. Thanks. So it's probably as clear as mud, or I can probably, okay. But anyway, happy to take any questions about that.
I'll just speak up now, if that's okay. So Ben Aaron from Agro Currency Group. Unfortunately, I'm not going to ask you about monetary policy and FX and your business at the moment. I'm actually going to ask you about this.
Good.
We've obviously experienced about a third of our banks pretty much close to ready or getting for readiness for Monday. I guess the rest of them are business as usual. How tolerant are you in timing for this then? Obviously, you said otherwise that they will be ready away, but are you going to put a time frame on that to for expectations?
Sure. That's
Sorry, can I just add a few more to that as well? Things that are linked to benchmarks, the four year picks, such as, I'm not sure if we're really, but like G10 NDFs, how restrictive are you going to be about that? One could argue that the initial start of trade is actually principal rather than a principal price per bit on the spread, and therefore might suffice for the actual whole product rather than the back end of the product being an agency price.
On the degree of tolerance, as everyone knows, in the end, so there is no FX market regulator. There are securities market regulators in the various jurisdictions, clearly, with different degrees of appetite for enforcement around this. But we didn't set out a time frame. We haven't yet. It may well be the case that in the not-too-distant future, we will. But I suppose our assessment was that given the reasonable degree, but not universal, I get that, of market support for what we were proposing, that we thought the follow-through on most of what we were proposing would be would occur. To date, as you said, it hasn't. I think I'd wait and see where we are this time next week, to be honest, because I think that we'll see a bit more movement in the next few days in terms of how widespread the adoption is. But so my aim is to sort of take a stock take of where we are, say, around about the end of the month, have a look at that, and then decide whether, you know, harder deadlines need to be set, particularly around the pricing. On NDFs... one of the other points I suppose we wanted to get across is, customers should be clear when the bank they're dealing with is acting as principal and when they're acting as agent. And as I said, how you want to charge for those two things depends on which of the two, potentially depends on which of the two it is. As long as everyone knows and it's clear what's going on, that's fine. I think that hasn't been the case in the past. If nothing else, I think all of this has actually caused some people to actually think, well, maybe I should have a look at it, have a look at this in more detail. I mean, to some extent, the movement to the fix came about because of other goings-on in the FX market middle of last decade, or five, six, 7 years ago, I suppose, which caused people to move to a more obvious reference point, which was the 4 p.m. fix. So that actually came in response to a previous pricing model and lack of transparency around principal and agent business. And so people thought, okay, I move to a transparent price, I can just forget about it. I suppose our point is, no, you can't quite just forget about it. You also need to do a reasonable amount of due diligence around the way your business is being executed, even at a known price like the 4 p.m. fix. Yeah, Chris.
Thanks. Chris Long from the Commonwealth Bank. Guy, you mentioned some discussions with index providers. Did you get any feedback that they may consider using FX rates, fixing rates away and less reliant on London 4 p.m.?
No. Yes. So that came up. No, that's not my sense. So amongst, one thing the 4 p.m. fix is so embedded within any number of things across the industry, A, that would be difficult for them to do it. What they said, however, what they said is that their business is all demand-driven. So if someone comes to them and says, I want an index which uses some other reference rate, they will provide it. So they're happy to do that, but they said from their point of view, all of their business basically is from people who want to use the 4pm rate. So, as some of you may know and others may not, so WM actually provides fixing rates for the major currencies pretty much every half hour throughout the whole day. So there are plenty of other times available. WM's also not the only provider of reference rates. There are others. So there are alternatives out there. There are alternative times of day out there as well. So if you're not tracking an index which references 4pm, there are other times where you can still trade off around a benchmark rate besides 4pm London. That said, as I said, the volume at 4pm is 10 times larger than it is at any other time of the day, which if you just use volume to judge liquidity, which doesn't always work, anyway, arguably is the most liquid time of the day, so you can understand why people gravitate towards that. But at the same time, we have seen over the last year, 18 months, or 2 years maybe now, people move some of their business away from the 4pm rate if they don't actually have to execute at it. Anyone else? I'm not sure how we're going on time, but got one more.
Tony Bradley from Capital. I spent most of my career in banks dealing with pieces, etc. Now, a lot of this stuff, a lot of which I'm quite authority to penalise traders for collusion, etc., is based around protecting your own position. For example, if you have to buy 500 euro on fixed and your colleague to sell 500,
Yeah, so that's actually what I mentioned that during our talk. So yes, we did. We put it out there in the preliminary report. We actually put out exactly what you just said, which was the central netting utility, which wouldn't be which does exactly that, collecting all the fixing orders in the market, netting them down, and then executing. So the first part, conceptually at least, isn't too hard to come up with, the gathering all the orders and maximising the netting opportunities. The second part is how you actually would then execute the net was more complicated. We were quite happy to hear people's suggestions as to how that might actually go about, happen. We talked a lot amongst ourselves. We talked a lot with other market participants about how that might actually happen, and didn't get to anything particularly conclusive. That option, I think, still remains open as potentially where the market may... I'm not sure the market's going to gravitate towards that because you're going to need someone to actually coordinate and pull that into one central location. I still think that is an option which is on the table in the future. We didn't push it on the market in our final report, but we did say, it is out there. It's something we talked about quite a bit and certainly remain open to constructive suggestions as to how such a utility might actually function in the market. So still remain very open to hearing thoughts around that. All right. Okay. Thanks.